Order. Order.
Are there any select committee reports?
Ministry of Foreign Affairs Chief Executive John Allen appeared before the Foreign Affairs, Defence and Trade Committee. He delivered the news that job cuts were just around the corner.
The ministry will slim down by about 200 people. So it's all about being nimble, all about being dynamic, all about being efficient, and most importantly about being effective in the future.
Foreign Minister Murray McCulley also appeared before the committee and faced an accusation of nepotism from Labour's Foreign Affairs spokeswoman, Marianne Street.
Charles Finney, there were no tenders for 2 months' work, $54,000. No tender process. Mark Blumsky, $75,000 for an aid program with no tenders. Surely this funding is not your personal piggy bank to disperse to friends, your 10 closest friends.
Mr. McCulley said it was a goal for the ministry to move towards more external contracting.
The ministry needs to be open-minded about its capacity to take on people who might have the required skills. The idea that the only people that can work for the New Zealand Foreign Ministry in a valuable way are full-time staff members who have been there all their lives is frankly outdated nonsense.
But Ms. Street didn't agree.
There is a negative impact on staff, and my experience of staff in different posts that I've had the good fortune to visit recently is that our career diplomats serve us extremely well. They are generally of very, very high quality and highly trained and well informed, and I think what you have delivered is a broadside.
Labour's Marianne Street during the Foreign Affairs, Defence and Trade Committee's meeting to consider this year's budget appropriation for Foreign Affairs. Elsewhere, a delegation from the Tuvalan Parliament briefed the Foreign Affairs, Defence and Trade Committee, and the effect of climate change and rising sea levels was high on the mind of Tuvalu's Parliamentary Speaker, Sir Kamutu Latasi.
The trees are falling in the beach because of the erosion of the tide and all that. And with an island 3 metres above sea level, all around the nine islands, there's nothing we can do about it.
Sir Latasi said his nation wouldn't stand a chance in the face of a tsunami.
If such thing hit our group of islands, I don't think there is any time to flash a message that we are in trouble or what. Because within 5 or 10 minutes, everybody would be either drowned or floating and the land would be under water.
Mr. Latasi said his government had appealed to other nations to address the issue, but felt all avenues had been exhausted.
If nothing can be done from your side, nothing we can do. We'll just live on as human beings and hope for the best that there's no tsunami that hits our island.
Tuvalu's Parliamentary Speaker, Sir Kamutu Latasi. Later, Tuvalu's Minister of Natural Resources, Isaiah Taia Etelele, pointed to another problem caused by climate change.
The Tuvalu waters are getting warmer than before, and this will cause the fish to migrate to other oceans where they are more comfortable adapted to.
Mr. Itilele said changes in ocean current also had an effect on his country's fishing industry.
Now, according to data that we receive from researchers and scientific research, the fish are spawned right up in the Philippines and Indonesia, where the sea is a little bit still. Once the tuna spawn and tuna species, alike species, spawn in there, they will migrate through the current that comes along from Indonesia and Philippines down to Papua New Guinea and then to the Pacific Ocean. Now, the current at this time has been changing. And so instead of coming their way, most of them, they're coming down to Australia and New Zealand.
About 25% of Tuvalu's GDP came from the fishing industry.
Tuvalu has got only one resource, none other than the ocean that we have. And should the fisheries sector is affected by global warming, that will be a decline in the earning or money coming in from the fisheries.
Mr. Itilele said the future for Tuvalan fishing wasn't promising.
We are at the end of the line. It is a phenomenon that is beyond our control, and we, a country with no other resource and no other specialities in order to defend ourselves from global warming, we are just left there at the big ocean, not knowing where to go.
Tuvalu's Minister of Natural Resources, Isaiah Taia Etelele, and the temporary chair of the Foreign Affairs, Defence and Trade Committee, National's Todd McClay, took the opportunity to outline New Zealand's commitment to building its Pacific partnerships.
Over the last 2.5 years, we've done one very large and I think extremely important piece of work, which was an inquiry and report into New Zealand's relationship with the Pacific or the South Pacific. One of the things that we recognised as parliamentarians is that we don't have enough contact with our colleagues, parliamentarians from other countries. And we've made a number of proposals to look for ways to get to know each other more, to cooperate, to have opportunities like this, to discuss issues of commonality and of common interest. So your visit here today is probably the start of a process I think in this committee at least we hope could be added to and grown so that at all levels politicians can, rather than talking about each other or only reading about each other in the newspapers, have an opportunity to learn more about the challenges that we all face and again the good stuff that's going on.
Temporary Chair of the Foreign Affairs, Defence and Trade Committee, National's Todd McClay, speaking to a delegation from the Parliament of Tuvalu. Elsewhere in the committee rooms this week, Pacific Affairs Minister Georgina Te Huhu was up before the Government Administration Committee as it considered this year's budget appropriation for her ministry. Mrs. Te Huhu began by touching on the impact of the Canterbury earthquakes.
I have to say, like probably all ministers will say, that they've been very proud of the way that officials and staff have handled the responses to Christchurch. It's no less the case in the case of the ministry, which, as you know, is a very small ministry. And in Christchurch, we have 4 staff. Clearly, the earthquake placed additional demands on the ministry. We had to rotate others from Wellington to assist, particularly in the early stages, when it was actually quite hard to make contact with Pacific families.
Mrs. Te Huhu explained the ministry's role after the quakes.
The big thing was communications, to get regular broadcasts on Pacific Radio, get information out about where services were. They conducted face-to-face meetings with community and church leaders, took mobile assistance vans out to specific community meetings, and basically registering, getting Pacific people registered. That in itself was a little bit of a challenge as well. And work in this area culminated in the establishment of a Pacific hub in Aranui in the week of 14th March 2011, which is staffed by Ministry of Pacific Island Affairs, other key government agency personnel, as well as local Pacific trusts and other NGOs.
Mrs. Te Huhu then described the ministry's relationship with other departments.
Clearly, the responsibility for delivering on a big goal like lifting incomes and standards of living for Pacific people lies with major agencies. I like to think we're an effective conduit between Pacific communities and government, that we can bring to government policy making and implementation information that no other government department can bring.
The Minister explained further.
In terms of who we're working with all of them, because actually you have to. You just have to. There's no way we can deliver on that big goal, but we can certainly choose some projects which we think can add value to what the bigger agencies are doing, and that's basically what we've done. So we're working heavily, obviously, with health and education.
Also appearing before the committee was the Ministry of Pacific Island Affairs Chief Executive, Colin Tukutonga. He spoke about a scheme the ministry had established in collaboration with the Reserve Bank that allowed Pacific workers in New Zealand to avoid high bank fees when sending money back to families in the islands.
Substantial amounts of money in anyone's language, $600 million US every year from Pacific diaspora, mainly New Zealand, back to the Pacific, costed anywhere up to 25% per transaction.
And the scheme had seen those fees drop dramatically.
It's now around 3 or 4%. So these are serious amounts of money that families at both ends, we would like to think, have saved as a result of this project.
Ministry of Pacific Island Affairs Chief Executive Colin Tukutonga speaking to the Government Administration Committee as it considered this year's budget appropriation for his ministry on Wednesday. I'm Rhys Lyon, and this program is brought to you with funding from the Office of the Clerk.